It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is the Fox News Rundown Extra. I'm Chris Foster. If you've seen Tyrus on TV or heard his podcast, you know he's a talker. That was the case when he was on the Rundown to talk about his new best-selling book, Just Tyrus, a memoir. It's about his life as a kid in abusive homes when he had a home, playing football, bouncing in clubs, working as a bodyguard for the rapper Snoop, fulfilling his dream of becoming a pro wrestler, and now getting paid to share his opinions on Fox News Channel, Fox Nation, and his podcast co-hosted with Kat Timpf. We talked for a while about the book and his very interesting life, and it was just too much to fit into the regular weekday podcast. That's what the extra's for. So thanks for listening. Please maybe subscribe if you haven't, and thanks if you do. Now here's Tyrus on the Fox News Rundown Extra. All right, so let's just get going. Tyrus, I know you're not looking for tears, but I got a little choked up reading about some of the stories from your childhood. Was it hard to dig back into stuff you may not have thought about for a while?
Well, first of all, thank you. You know what? I think what was the hardest thing is you think about it in your head and you replay things and you kind of dumb it down and you rationalize it and you normalize it. When you're putting it on paper and someone's reading it back to you or someone's editing it, it kind of takes you back there. And there were some moments where I had a difficult time writing the childhood piece.
I'm sure.
I kept wanting to take things out. It was a lot of that. And I still watered some of it down. Probably the biggest thing was I did an interview a few years back where they got me to talk, because I didn't like talking about it. This book was a big step for me. It was like therapy because I didn't like talking about it. And one of the things was when I first got to my foster home, they had to like take all the Brillo pads and stuff out of the house because I was trying to scrub my skin off so I could be white, so I could come home to my mother. And it was just something that I took out because it was just too much. So it's good to go through the process of writing it down. I kind of scoffed at things like that, but it really helps, and it also helps you put things in perspective. So it was difficult, but a good difficult, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. It makes a lot of sense. And I mean, like, look, you know that you pulled the knife on your dad when you were 4 years old and it's in your head, but reading those words, like you said, did it seem like you? Or does it seem like you?
When you have a memory of something, it's through your eyes. And then when you write it down, it's like you're the narrator. You're looking down on it. And that was different. And I always, and this is going to sound weird, but I made a joke out of that story. You know, the part about, you know, on TV, when you stab a guy, he dies. You know, he just falls to the ground. And when I did that, he was just extremely pissed off. So you kind of laugh. I mean, you laugh at that. But then if you read it, where you're a four-year-old who's gone from hiding under the bed and wetting himself because he's scared all the time to trying to stab somebody, it's not as funny as you think. So it's one of those things where it's really, I encourage everyone needs to write a book, whether you publish it or not, just to get a better understanding of yourself and kind of bring yourself back down to earth. I strongly suggest it.
Just hit a couple bullet points for people who don't know how you grew up. Started in Lynn, Massachusetts. Real quick, see if you like. Tell people in a couple of minutes what your life was like up to.
So 18. I was my parents. My mother ran away from home. She was 15. She met my biological father. He was 19, and he was the youngest of a huge family. And she was pregnant within a few weeks of them being together. Like it was just. She went from playing Barbies to being a pregnant 15-year-old who was about maybe 90 pounds soaking wet. And this was the 70s in Massachusetts and it was actually illegal at the time for blacks and whites to get married in Boston.
White mom, black dad.
Yep. And so they moved them to New Hampshire. And I was born in Exeter, New Hampshire because he wouldn't be arrested for one, statutory rape, and two, which was the minor one, like they for the whole the Mann Act. And being black and her being white. So I was born there. And this is another thing. My best guess was that it was the city of Lynn. I knew I was there for a time, but we didn't move around a lot. And it just went from her being treated like a princess to once I was born, that's when it became violent.
Yeah.
So it didn't start out that way, but it turned into that.
And then you had some adults in your life who were good people and maybe not so good people, and some people like your mom. Your mom comes off to me like someone who was just trying to do her best.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one thing is like my mother made decisions that as a child I didn't understand and resented her for it.
And she was making decisions effectively as a child.
Yeah, as herself. But as an adult and as a parent, I get it now. Because I one thing I say in the book is that her biggest concern was making sure we were taken care of. That was more important to her than anything else was going on. I mean, there's one thing that you hear people say, well, I would never leave my children or never give my children up. If it was the best thing for your children, I think it's pretty selfless to do that. And you can put the negative spin on it, but just think about a mother who has nothing. And she's got to, you know, go back to school and get her life together. And she couldn't do both. So she had to make a really tough decision. And her only thing was that we had to stay together. And
you and your brother.
Me and my brother, yeah. So.
And she was back. She was out of your life. She was in your life. She was almost like a friend for a while.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to describe. So just to kind of give you an idea, when the abuse from my father probably would still. I don't think it would have been the death of her had it not been turned on me. And we talked about the knife thing. Attempting to stab him with the knife turned into one of the worst beatings of my life. And he was convinced that I was not his child at that point. And so then, which meant he was going to pass the savings on to her. But because he put hands on me and was attempting to basically throw me out a window and of the apartment that we were living in. And she talked him down. But once he had put hands on me, that's what triggered her to go, enough, I got to get out.
Yeah.
And so that's what that made the change. But unfortunately, we got to my grandparents' house, and it being the sign of the times, me and my brother were just, you can stay, but they can't.
Yeah, because you're, well, and here's the other thing, I guess it's the thing about America. If you're, I mean, you're not appreciably darker than I am, and I'm a white guy, but if you're a little black in America, you're black.
Yeah, I mean, 50%, 100%. But, I mean, there was this poem in Roots where, like, they broke it down to where, like, you were, like, three-fifths and you were still had to get your ass on the field. So, but that's exclusive to America. I mean, that's the one thing about our class of races, and that was done by the founding fathers, where it was you're either white or not, period. Right. You know, in Europeans, it's different. In European racism is different. In this country, it was very, well, black and white, for no lack of a better use of the term. So,
And the more kids that are interracial going forward, the weirder that all is to me. I mean, I've got friends who, one parent is super dark, one parent's super white, one, you know, African descent, Caucasian descent, and the kid is, but it's a thing. The kid is black.
Yeah, it's not arguable. Well, again, it goes back to American culture, but at the same time, kids born now, it's a completely different world. And as we know now, it is, you can be pretty much anything. You can identify with anything you want. Sometimes, I talked about in the book, one of the things I said, the nicest white person will say, hey, do you happen to be mixed? Are you half black? And any brother will come up to you and be like, you have black, right? Or you're black, right? So I see it in your face. So it's a different thing where it's like a polite difference, and it's on the other side, it's an acceptance. Like, we're in the same boat. Yeah. So, but that's just the way it is. It's different now. It's a different world now. It's a better world now. I think sometimes it's frustrating that we don't acknowledge how much things are better now than they were then, especially on the race front, because now it can be used for anything. But it was different then, and my mother had a tough time with that. And my grandfather, I don't have, and I talk, especially at the end, I have the thing, my thoughts, where you can have two thoughts about one person. A person's flaw or issue should not be the only way you look at them. Yes, he had a problem with race. He had a problem with blacks, 1,000%. But he was a family man who loved his family, who worked hard every day. That was just his issue. And if you look at it from where his 15-year-old daughter ran away and met the worst representative of that group, so he's going to have a certain way to think. I don't justify it. I mean, but at the same time, I think you can have understanding of where someone's coming from. You might not agree with it. You might not like it. But that doesn't make them the devil. It just makes them – that's their issue.
Well, and that is a thing now that you are what your worst – transgression has ever been.
Right. And that's terrible.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
It's not all doom and gloom. There are a lot of funny stories in here. So let's get on to those. You were a bodyguard for Snoop for a while. Still friends to this day, right?
Yeah.
Bouncers in clubs. Tell the Snoop story about you're on tour in Russia, and the guy comes up, claims to be the best-selling rapper in Russia.
So by this time, I'm pretty much known for my bluntness, and I am the guy who ruins everyone's day. I'm the guy who ends the photo shoots. I'm the guy who says, no, he has to be at his appointment. That's my job,
and
I excel at it. So we're in Russia and we're backstage, and Snoop usually before he performs, he tends to like to like have a minute alone to just kind of like get his thoughts together, compress and get ready to go entertain for 2 or 3 hours or however long it was. Mm-hmm. And he's not to be disturbed in this time. And I'm usually on the door for that. And lo and behold, here comes a guy who he was a character out of. No one could have wrote this guy any better than he had a velvet suit on. Now, not a jumpsuit, a three-piece velvet suit.
Not a tracksuit.
No, not like, a tracksuit, like, suit, lapels. Like lapels. Yeah, button down, three buttons. suit, cane, every ring on his fingers, all diamonds, about 47 different necklaces, hat, sunglasses. He had the entire rapper starter set and then some. and this dude comes walking up and I'm looking at him in awe. I mean, he's just like, he was so shiny. I just remember how shiny he was. And it was a lavender and purple suit.
Of course
that's
it was.
Not, yeah, if you couldn't, the only thing he was missing was goldfish in his shoes. And he comes up to me and he informs me that he is Russia's greatest rapper. And I believe I said at the time that I said something like, yeah, it's like being the fastest one-leg runner. Nobody, yeah. It's not really a thing. Okay. Oh, great. Cool. And I need to meet with Snoop. And I said, oh, man, I'm sorry. He's not seeing anybody right now. And then he reminded me who he was.
Once again, I'm the greatest rapper.
I'm the greatest rapper, and I run things here. And it would be in your best interest for me to see Snoop, because if not, you're going to have a problem. It's day 12. Of the tour, okay? And I just didn't have time. So what I did was like, okay, look, you got me, bro. You got me, sir. I'm the decoy. He's not really behind me. He's down there. And I don't want any trouble. So I will take you to him. And he said, very good. You made a wise decision. You know, I might have a job for you one day. I said, oh, thank you. So as we walk to the thing, as I open the curtain, there's a flight of stairs going down, and he looks down, and as he went to say there's no Snoop there, I threw him
into the darkness,
and as he tumbled down the stairs, he could have been an opera singer because he had a really high-pitched scream, but his shoes came off. His purple shoes just flipped off, and I closed the curtain and went back to my spot, so I figured he's going to be at least down there for a while. And I remember the manager, Kevin Barkey, comes up and his face gets, he's Canadian, and he is about the most fair-skinned white guy on the planet. And whenever he gets frustrated, his whole face turns red. And I see him with a red face holding a shoe, is like, do we need to talk about this? And I just said, I would prefer not to. unfortunately, he did sustain an injury, but.
Unfortunately?
I did do my job and kept him safe. And turns out he was a dangerous character.
Oh, okay.
So I did the right thing.
So, bouncer, football player, pro wrestler, of course. Now you're now on Fox. You write that all those jobs have something in common, in that you want to be prepared, you want to be ready, but also leave some room for spontaneity. Like your wrestling matches are choreographed to a degree, but within that, you've got to have some room.
You got to create.
Play.
Yeah, you can't. There's, I don't like to give away too much of the magic show, but there's two ways of doing things. There's spots, and then there's call it out there. Calling it out there is the harder of the crafts because you're basically you and your dance partner are just going to work together and just kind of play it by ear. Let the crowd dictate it, or you dictate the crowd. And some things with camera angles and TV, you have to go over. But the best, most easiest stuff is when you're just like anything else. If you're trying to remember something, it never comes out right. Like if you gave me. You were going to ask me questions about inflation, and I had numbers in my head, and but I didn't really prepare, and I was trying to remember it. My interview is not going to be very good when you ask me the question. Wrestling is very similar to that. So, and the same thing with acting and stand-up comedy. You have to prepare. Everything for me, it started in football. It was film study. You do the work on the field, but it's not over there. Then you got to go in. Like, if you put 4 hours in the field, you got to put 3 hours in the tape room. And wrestling was the same way. You always have to be – I was always in film study, whether it was promos, wrestling. I would pick a classic wrestler, and I would study him for a week, and I'd try to take a few things from here and there, constantly improve yourself. Teaching, you're always having to up your game, lesson plans. You got to keep the kids interested. And then Fox News is all about preparation. You have – and it's very similar to wrestling. It's like the average promo in wrestling is about a minute. Mm-hmm. Live TV, you got to get it all across, get it in and get it out, and there's no retakes. Fox, a lot of our stuff is live, and there's other people, great minds around you. You've got about a minute and a half to get your point across, and there's no, I'd like to say this again, or, if I could just have a few more minutes. No, it doesn't work that way. So preparation is for me, is everything. And it all with film study. I probably watch, I would say probably 4 to 5 hours a day of film, just breaking stuff down, looking at different things, getting prepared. A lot of it is the when I get off from when we finish filming Gutfeld, I go back to my hotel and I'm doing news film study for probably 2 hours each night. Huh. Because and then I watch myself back and like you took too long for that. So it's all a process, and they're all relatable in terms of preparation.
Yeah, see, I don't like hearing myself back. I know it's
I hate the sound of my own voice. Yeah, I hate it. It's like I don't think anyone who does, but when I hear myself talk, all I hear is marbles. So I can't stand hearing the sound of my own voice, but it's important in terms of like being better.
One thing you kind of finish with is this idea of being accountable. And when you're a kid, it was their fault. It was their fault. It was their fault. But now as a grown up, as a dad, you want to learn to own your own stuff, right? And
right.
Also, and know yourself enough that not that you can't accept legitimate criticism, but know when that's invalid and that you know what you're doing.
Right. And the only way you can do that is by being honest with yourself. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother gave me really great advice at a really rough time in my childhood. I was dealing with some abuse with my mother's husband, and I wanted to run away. I wanted to go back with them. Mm-hmm. And she basically said, there's no escape. And it's not what you're going through. It's your reaction to what you're going through is how you're going to be judged and remembered. And so I lived that with, it's my reaction. And that took all the power away from the negative stuff and never accepting no. So if someone does something bad to me it's just like if you're in the schoolyard and somebody hits you and then you run and you hit them back and that's what everybody sees. It's that reaction that you're judged by. Not everyone's going to take the time to say, hey, what happened? Why did you do that? They're going to say, wow, look at that big bully hitting other kids. So it's learning to settle your differences inside and owning every job that I was fired from or cut from football when my appendix went out. I can look back and see things that I could have done better. But if I focus on that, if I blame the coach for not liking me, he didn't like me, he was hating on me or whatever, I will never get out of that situation. And that will become my golden ticket of obscurity to where that is my out for everything. Why are you 40 years old working in a club? Well, I was playing ball and I blew my knee out and my coach was a hater. And, you know, and so that's my story.
Right,
and
that,
we all
and
have
that
friends
was that,
like
and that, was that.
Yeah. Or, you know, I was at Fox News, but, you know, I wouldn't say what they wanted me to say or, you know, which never happens. But there is an out. Mm-hmm. So you use that out instead of going, looking in the mirror going, man, you know what? If I was training better, if I wasn't out in the clubs those nights, maybe my, you know, the alcohol wouldn't have affected my appendix the way it did. So you can look at things of what you could have done better and react. Even if there's a million people saying, nope, WWE was wrong, they did you dirty, they fired you. Mm-hmm. It's my reaction. And I was able to pick up the pieces and move on. If I stayed there, I'd still be there.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, man.
Oh, thank you.
Best-selling book. Let me ask you one more thing. You've had a bunch of names. Your name's George.
Yep.
You've been going by Tyrus for a while now. You had some names in the middle. King Biscuit didn't stick.
No, I wasn't a big fan of that one. Dumont, thank you.
If somebody wakes you up out of a sound sleep, what's your name?
Usually it's Dad. That's the only one.
If somebody, you know what I'm saying.
My close friends, my circle, they call me G. I don't think I get called George very much. And that was something that I had to come to terms with in the book, was because for a long time, I didn't like my name because I didn't like my family. Hmm. You know, I changed my real biological name, whatever you call it, was Clements. And I didn't think it was fair to my mother. So when I started playing sports and got my first jersey, mm-hmm. they asked me what my name was. And I said Murdoch, because I thought she was at least trying. So it should be her name. So then I realized names, it's you're not defined by your name and you're not defined by where you come from. You're defined about who you are. So when I was in the WWE, that's when I had to become, I mean, I had a ton of nicknames, but Brodus Clay was mine. And it was like an homage to Snoop, and Dusty Rhodes put the Clay on the end of it. And it was mine. And then when I left there, I wanted to reinvent myself. And I couldn't be just George or, you know. So when Tyrus came out with John Gerbuck with TNA Impact, and it was about redefining yourself. So that's why I stuck with Tyrus. But like I said, people close to me, it's G, but everyone else is Tyrus. Or the smart-ass internet guy, hey, Murdoch, and I'd be like, all right, bruh.
You got me.
Yeah, you, my government name. Congratulations.
Well, in this case, the title of the book, Just Tyrus, a memoir. It's good to talk to you, man, and congratulations again.
Oh, thank you so much, man.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, publisher of The Federalist, and I'm inviting you to join a new conversation with the smartest thinkers out there about the country and where we're going. Subscribe to the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in free-fall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.